and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday late morning here. I'm going to be breaking this podcast into two parts for scheduling purposes, so bear with us. But joining me first, I really wanted to talk to this man, Mark J. Spears from Manscaped, who's joining me from Las Vegas. He's been at the Summer League the last few days, the first 4 or 5 days of Summer League. That's why I wanted to talk to you, Spears. How are you doing?
Oh, man, it's a beautiful morning in Vegas. I'm up. You should be impressed. It's 8 a.m.
That's right.
And I'm up. That's dedication in Vegas,
man. It is. Absolutely. So I appreciate it. So you've been putting out some really good stuff from Summer League. I just want to know, this is usually the best time of Summer League, the first 4 or 5 days, because the players all play. As we get along, some guys get hurt, some guys stop playing. I want to know your initial feelings on what you've seen before we talk about specific stuff.
Banchero, I'm always pronouncing his last name wrong.
Banchero.
Paolo Banchero is the real deal.
Yeah.
And I thought he was before. And I had a debate with an NBA assistant about him versus Chet. I love them both. But I told them my guess was that the Magic were going to select Banchero because I think they needed somebody that could help them immediately. And there probably was some thought that Jabari Smith and Chet Holmgren might need some time. I do think both of them will end up being great players, but when you look at Paolo's body, I mean, he has a Karl Malone body. Remember how Karl Malone looked when he got drafted?
Oh, yeah.
He had that uncomfortable suit on. He was moving his tie and all that.
I don't remember that, but I certainly remember Karl Malone's build.
Yeah. I mean, he's built like that at 19. And he also has some amazing leadership qualities already. And I just think they – probably felt like they just couldn't develop anybody any longer. They needed somebody that could help them now. And that's not to say that those other two guys aren't going to be special. That's not to say that Chet still may not end up being the best guy overall when it's all said and done. But I think the Magic needed to move forward with somebody that could help them now. And the way he's played from the moment he stepped in, he's played like a bully. He reminds me of, like, even though there was a small sample size for Zion, that little bit of sample size in Summer League, he bullied everybody. And that's what Banchero is doing. And I think another thing to your point of going to Summer League early, they're going to start sitting guys pretty soon that are bigger names. And I could see that happening to him. Only thing knock I'll say on him is this is Summer League. He hasn't rebounded well. He has had some turnovers. So I expected him to be a better rebounder so far. But the big surprise is he's an amazing passer, a Joker-level passer. I know that's saying a lot, but he's
That's a very high bar.
It's a very high bar. But he passes on that level. I think one of the games he might have had 6 assists.
Mm-hmm.
So I just really think that from a body-wise, mentality-wise, he's going to be ready to make an impact from day one of the season.
Yeah, that's one of the things about the Magic. So they're running their offense kind of through him in Summer League, and I think they're doing that for a reason because they intend to do that quite a bit when he starts playing. So you wonder with the Magic, they've drafted point guards of previous two drafts in Jalen Suggs and Cole Anthony, and neither of those guys are great outside shooters. So they're both kind of creators, and so you wonder and then you've got Markelle Fultz, who actually, of the three of them, is actually the best shooter amongst the three of them, and so you wonder how. If they're really going to have Banchero be like their point forward, which is what his skill set suited for, is what you're talking about here. how that's going to work. But, you know, that's some time. I mean, their organization is going to probably be built around Banchero going forward. So we'll see how that plays out. The thing about him, Spears, you know this, like a lot of times when you see these guys who are one and done, they're just, their bodies are so far behind, you know, and that's why the G League guys, I think, have had some, you know, an interesting impact, because they're playing against 23 to 27 year olds regularly. The difference in the NBA between these guys who are full men, I mean, this has been said as long as time, you know, the full men, these guys don't play against. I mean, I'm sure Paolo and Chet Holmgren have played against the best people in their age group. They're in their last decade.
Yeah.
But they've never played against guys 5 to 7 years older than them, 5 to 10 years older than them, who are at the top of their craft every single night. So you often see, especially big men, struggle early on. So, but Paolo is an exception to that.
Yeah.
He has an NBA body already, which I've talked about before, but boy, has that come through in the summer league.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, you know, I'll give you another guy who's, I think the Kings are still trying to figure him out instead in terms of, is he a three? Is he a four? Can he even play some five? It's Keegan Murray. He has been quietly amazing. And he doesn't play like Tim Duncan, but he carries himself like Tim Duncan. Just quiet demeanor, just plays. There's nothing that's really loud about his game, right? He's not really like dunking on people. It's not really flashy. It's very fundamental. But then, and it's funny, I talked to Vivek about him today, the other day. I've talked to Mike Brown, Vivek Ranadive, the Kings owner, Mike Brown, the head coach. And they're like, at the end of the game, you're like, okay, he has 22-8 and two blocks. Like, because his game isn't loud, you don't really see the production that he's going to have. And when he played Banchero on Saturday afternoon, Banchero tried to beat him up, like physically punish him. I could tell that was his mentality. The beginning of the game is, all right, I'm going to physically punish this dude. He's not on my level, and he's just going to disappear. I think he did the same thing when he played Jabari Smith in the game one. And Jabari Smith didn't respond. That wasn't the case for Keegan Murray. Keegan Murray started off slow, but he ended up having a really great game, great numbers, well-rounded game. And he made that crazy three-pointer to send the game into overtime, which is the greatest summer league game in the history of summer league games, Brian.
Because there was a big comeback in the end, and then he hit Murray hit the shot to force overtime.
Just calmly, right? Like it was nothing.
Yeah.
Pump faked on two guys.
Yeah, let's just, in case people didn't see what happened. Yeah. And I didn't see what happened. I saw the last 20 seconds. But go ahead, tell us what happened at the end of that game.
The Kings were down like 8 with like 2 minutes left and furiously came back.
They were down 6 with 10 seconds left.
Yeah. So he hit a 3, get a steal. Sabonis is there. Davion Mitchell's there. They all jump up. This is right in front of Mike Brown and Vivek Ranadive. Keegan gets the ball. Hey, you know, Orlando does a good job. Two defenders go at it. It was like a packed house. It felt like an NCAA tournament game. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And Keegan does a pump fake.
With just to be clear, with like 3 seconds, yeah. He's pump faking. Yeah.
Calmly pump fakes. These dudes fly in the air, got him, shoots the 3, bang. And the crowd just erupted like they just won a championship or something.
Right. And then they lost in overtime, but still. It was from an awkward spot on the floor. It was almost like a Larry Bird, Reggie Miller type situation. Yeah. Where they stole the ball in the inbounds, and then he got the ball, and he was sort of like in between the corner and the
sideways too, I think.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like he was squarely like to the basket. I mean, but that to me is a great like view of his game. He just doesn't get rattled. Even in a situation like that, panic situation, the crowd is panicked. Calmly pump fakes, gets those dudes out of the way. Very Larry Bird looking like, and makes the three. It was, I really like this kid, Brian.
So you did a story about him on Antscape.
Yes.
And you talked about his background. So he is from Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Yeah.
There's been a history of some Iowans in the NBA.
Harrison Barnes, his teammate.
Harrison Barnes is now his teammate on the Kings. Ricky Davis back in the day.
Okay.
Kyle Korver grew up in Iowa. I think he was born in Southern California, grew up in Iowa. Greg McDermott.
Yeah.
You know, there's some, you know, there's, it's not, you know, I'm defending the Midwest here. It's not all cornfields.
Usually get their players from Chicago, right?
That's true. He didn't have any Division I. I think what Western Illinois offered him, right?
Yeah, it's kind of what he was saying, like the coach was leaving, like it wasn't a strong,
right?
Kind of a complicated offer. He was like, he had three Division II offers and a couple junior college offers and like a soft Division I offer from Western Illinois.
Right.
And his dad, and he has a twin brother too that could play. His dad, who played at Iowa, was like, no. We're going to take you guys to a prep school in Florida. Keegan wanted to go to a junior college, a local junior college. His dad was like, no. And Keegan actually had good numbers in high school. He just, I don't know why he fell under the radar.
I mean, he's got great size, right? I mean, you know.
So he goes.
Somebody screwed that up, by the way.
So he goes to some prep school, DME, I think it's called.
Yeah, plays you said it was well. In Daytona Beach.
Yeah. Goes to his dad's alma mater, dream school, Iowa. And he said the first question he got was, is he a walk-on? Like he's
They're talking about this kid who had no offers and went to, like, I mean, I had never, now for, maybe somebody will come and display that seven NBA players have gone to DME Academy. I had never heard of DME Academy.
Yeah, I never.
Wasn't like he went to IMG or some other of these prep schools that are well known.
Prolific prep. You know.
Right. So like I can kind of get it. Like, okay, this local kid who went to prep school shows up.
Yeah. And so he went there, had an okay freshman year, but he said he saw some things at the end of his freshman year that made him feel like he could be an NBA player, which is like, okay.
Most college guys think they're going to be NBA players. Yeah. So that's not unusual.
But he had a sensational sophomore year. He played with Garza, I think, for a year. The dude that's at Detroit.
He actually got cut. I think he's a free agent, but yeah, he was drafted.
Yeah. So I've had some scouts tell me they thought he was the number two player to draft.
So you know, we talked about before the draft, Sacramento had the four pick. A lot of people had Jaden Ivey as the number four guy in the draft. There was some feel that the Kings would trade the pick. And they had some discussions. But from what I hear, like some of the teams I talked to, and look, post-draft, everybody's kind of got their story. I'm not like totally standing by this. I haven't like fully vetted it or whatever. But from what I hear, the Kings didn't really have their pick on offer.
Yeah.
They liked Keegan Murray. People were wondering because they had Davion Mitchell. They had drafted the year before because they had De'Aaron Fox. They had caused a problem and they had three guards. Were they going to draft Jaden Ivey? I just think the Kings, and you could say it was wrong and we'll see. They thought Murray was a better player. So, and they didn't want to trade the pick and he played great. Did you go to those games at the Chase Center last 2 weeks ago?
I did.
He was the best. He was like kind of the best rookie there, right?
No question, the best player. He had, I think he had 26 his first game. Second game struggled a little. Third game had 24.
Right.
No, he's putting up numbers, man. And
I'm afraid you're about to say something, man. You're about to say something like he's going to win Rookie of the Year is what you're about to say.
No, I was going to say something else.
Kings are going to make the playoffs. Is that what you're going to say?
I think so. Man. Now, I don't know if you could pull their roster up.
Yeah.
Let's pull up their roster. And this is why I feel like minimum playing. I'm going to give them
Here's your story. Your story on Keegan Murray starts with playoffs question mark.
Yeah.
From last week. So, I mean.
He thinks they're going to make it. I think they got a shot. And I think people are really be like sleeping on their roster. And obviously, it's Kings, so you get it, right?
Well, they got Kevin Huerter for very good value.
Yes.
So when you look at their offseason, they add this guy who's looking very good. And, you know, the rule on Summer League is looking very good doesn't always mean you're going to be good in the pros or, you know, good when your season starts. But looking bad is usually not good.
Yeah.
The bad indicator is a bigger problem than the good is a good problem. So, look, he's looking good. You know, they signed Malik Monk. They got Kevin Huerter for great value, like a future first round pick. That's like top 14, top 12, top 10. I think I saw on the trade. So when you look at what they've brought in terms of talent, you know, you're talking about a top 5 pick. You're talking about two wings who can score.
Yeah.
And they hired a coach.
Give the names.
Well, so De'Aaron Fox will be their starting one.
Yeah.
I don't know if Davion Mitchell will be their starting two, considering they brought in Huerter and Monk.
But... Yeah, I see him probably coming off the bench. Although he's got some fire, like he's expecting to do big games. You got a new coach, so I think you just throw the ball out and see what happens, right?
Right. And you have Harrison Barnes and Keegan Murray will probably be their 3-4.
Yeah.
And you have Sabonis, who will be their 5. Or, you know, they could have Sabonis at 4 and they could put Rashawn Holmes at 5. You know, Rashawn Holmes is a quality center, probably undervalued center.
Yeah, very undervalued.
You know, Sabonis, it will be interesting to see if Sabonis signs an extension this offseason. He's extension eligible. He and the organization are in love with each other right now. They're both hugging each other. I thought it was interesting. So there was a pickup game, and for all I know, they played 7 days in a row, but there was a pickup game last week in LA that some photos got out of it. And I always assume that they're purposely, they were strategically leaked, but, Westbrook was in the game. Durant was in the game. Kyrie was in the game. That's who we're reacting to. Sabonis was in the game. And Sabonis was wearing King's gear. And not all the players were wearing their team's gear. Kyrie was not wearing Nets gear. Sabonis is very happy in Sacramento. And so it'll be interesting to me if he signs an extension there this summer.
Well, little interesting side note on him. He settled in Napa Valley.
Mm.
So loves it there. He and his wife, I believe they have a young child. And he commutes, and he told me to commute like it's kind of reminiscent of being back in Europe. He likes to drive, likes driving around, you know.
Well, we'll see how much Napa he likes Valley. To drive.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a nice place to drive through. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think when obviously they're heavy in town, he'll probably have I'm sure he has a crib there too, but like he's enjoying Northern California. I think it's kind of brilliant. I have not heard of any Kings like saying, and this is no shade on Sacramento, even though Bay Area people shade on Sac all the time. Napa's like not too, it's like 40 minutes. It's Napa Valley's cool. So I was actually impressed that he's doing that.
You know, I have to say, I can't say that I can speak on a great knowledge of a lot of Kings players during my career in the NBA. I have not covered.
Have you even been to the arena?
The new arena? Yeah, I've been there multiple times. Yeah. But I've never witnessed the Sacramento Kings playoff game in person. They haven't made it in forever. So
I have.
It was a long time. I know when I first
it's not gonna be the same if and when it happens as Cowbell.
Yeah.
Cowbell Kingdom. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's.
Well, that arena, like Arco Arena. I mean, I, you know, when I came into the NBA, when I started covering the NBA, the Kings were very good. You know, Mike Bibby, Peja Stojakovic, Chris Webber. I mean, they were ran the corner, Vladi. I mean, they were really good, but that's a long time ago. Those guys are all got gray hair. I will say something about Mike Brown. I covered Mike Brown for 5 years as a head coach in Cleveland, day to day. I know him well. I have a good relationship with him. So I'll just identify that up front. Mike Brown, like he, you know, and he's the guy who in his career has, you know, he's coached LeBron. He's coached Kobe. I mean, he's got a handful of rings because he was the assistant coach with Tim Duncan and assistant coach with Steph Curry. And he coached LeBron to the finals and he coached Kobe and like he's worked with superstar players. And so his record is very good. But you know, he's had the fortune to be with all these superstars, but he teaches and believes in defense like no one I've ever covered on a day-to-day basis. He believes defense is so important and he has abilities to be like a whisperer to complex guys. So like, for example, when he was in San Antonio, he was the guy who could get to Steven Jackson, who we all know, you know, the captain. I love him as a guy, but he's a difficult guy.
Yeah.
He was able to, and then in Indiana too, then they had him in Indiana and he was able to sort of be with him those places. One of the biggest losses that the Warriors are facing with him leaving is that, you correct me if I'm wrong, like his relationship with Draymond was incredibly valuable in the way he could reach Draymond and connect with Draymond. So, but Mike is a type of coach and he's kind of hokey and corny. And if you saw anything about his press conference, he was making like sort of hokey dad jokes. That's who he is. That's his personality. Okay. And he kind of has like a nerdish quality to him because of his glasses and kind of the way he talks. But when it comes to defense, the way LeBron has played on defense in his career is because of Mike Brown. Mike Brown taught him to be a good defensive player. And like, I remember early on, this is how Mike Brown looks at the game. I remember early on covering him and there was like games like the Cavs would lose like 86-84 and the game would end and you'd be like, boy, Mike, you guys shot 36%. You know, LeBron was 2 of 11 in the fourth quarter. He had 6 turnovers. What do you do to get your offense going? He'd go, if we lost 86-84, we should have given up 83 points. That's the way he looked at it. And if you remember the Cavs team that got to the finals, no, I mean, people make fun of that team, whatever you want to say. They got to the finals because Mike Brown molded them into this defensive juggernaut behind LeBron. So the Kings have not been good defensively. Their history of defense is atrocious. So if Mike Brown can do his Mike Brown stuff, you know, they should get better. I'm not saying they're going to playoff Spears, but you like Keegan Murray. That's what you're here to tell us from Summerlin.
Yeah. And going to Mike, you know what? I have the same relationship as you. You know what? He's got a little swag now, Brian. He's that guy we remember from the Cavs and the Lakers. He's, if you watch how he dresses and he carries himself, and perhaps that's, we saw young Mike. We've seen him evolve, and he dresses a little more San Francisco now. I think the Bay had an influence on him.
Okay, I see.
But you know what I think has helped him with this situation is having coached Nigeria, because he had to build Nigeria's men's basketball program from scratch. And it still has a lot of challenges, but he like basically has been trying to follow a USA basketball model, you know, start kind of getting used to looking for the younger talent, building the, like, so he had a camp last year before the Olympics where he had like probably looked at 60 players. A lot of them were young players, you know, Nigerian American that weren't ready.
I think a lot of which he's pretty much paying for out of his own pocket. too, by the way.
Yeah, he got some sponsors and some help. Yeah, but he might have had to pay for some things. But you know what? I don't think he had to pay for anything. I just don't think he got paid.
Oh, okay. Maybe he took what his salary would be and put it.
Okay. And paid his assistants with it, I think.
Yeah, okay.
But I think that experience is helping him like build in Sacramento. And what I say by that is like during the playoffs when he had off time, he went and saw De'Aaron Fox in Sacramento. He had dinner with Keegan Murray during the playoffs in San Francisco. He was sneaking to Napa to go visit Sabonis. Like he's been doing all these things. And I heard they had a dinner in Napa Valley, like the Kings players did, like the ones that were still, you know, under contract and everything. So it's like Murray, Fox, Keegan, you know, Sabonis, Mitchell. And I heard the bill was pretty hefty. Right?
Like, yeah, but there's some restaurants in Napa that can get that way, right?
And I heard the Kings were like, is this correct? And he's like, hey, I want to build a first-class environment here. I want players to come here and know that we're going to do, like, first-class things. And they're like, all right. So I think I'm going to give Vivek credit for this. I think he's, like, letting Mike build this, letting Mike try to bring some respectability that they've wanted for a long time to the Kings. So there's this different air about the franchise and how they're doing things with Mike's ascension there. And I think Joe Dumars, who has since left, really pushed them to give Mike the opportunity too. So I think he Joe played a role in that happening.
Well, I guess the Spurs and the Jazz were in front of them, obviously, and they're headed backwards. So, I mean, those are two teams I think they pass. Yeah. But what other teams?
They're going to have some luck go their way too. They're going to have to stay healthy. They, you know, maybe they kind of become Pelicans like, right?
Yeah. Well, hell, if they make the play-in, it's considered a huge,
goodness. If they make the play-in, it might as well be the playoffs there. And yeah. I've talked to some of the players about it. If they make the playoffs, you will see grown people crying like they won a championship.
Yeah, they do have great support. They do have great support considering how bad they've been.
Yeah.
And, you know, the arena, it's not the Chase Center, to be clear.
No,
okay?
No.
It's not the Chase Center, but it's a really good arena.
Yeah.
They did a really good job.
Yeah.
Considering, you know, what they had. And that's the reality. Like, the thing about the NBA is not all 30 markets are equal, or 29, 28 markets, whatever it is. You're not going to walk in to crypto.com arena and get the same experience that you do when you walk in to the Target Center.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. So the Kings are dealing with the hand they have. Before we go.
Oh, can I say one thing real quick?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mentioned Joe Dumars. He and other NBA execs in a competition committee are meeting Tuesday. I wouldn't be surprised if the take rule is eliminated from the NBA on Tuesday.
Where you're allowed to take it. You're allowed to do a take foul.
Yeah. So keep an eye on that.
And so they're going to go probably more to the international rule, which is if you stop a foul, if you stop a play, stop a fast break by just grabbing a guy.
Yeah.
It's like a technical. It's one shot in the ball.
Yeah. And I think another thing that's on the ballot is the playing game. Like making it this is it,
this is
concrete thing.
Yeah.
So I can't see them turning that down. So those are two things to keep an eye on Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Spears. Well, thanks, man. We're going to come back here with Kevin Pelton, who's going to join us. He's also in Vegas. So we'll be joining you with a minute. Thanks, Spears.
Thank you.
Ah, that sound has to make you smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Synchronize your online and in-person sales. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/hoop right now. Shopify.com/hoop. I listen to a lot of audio content. Is that the correct way to say what we're all doing right now? So that means I spend a lot of time with headphones in my ears. And recently, those headphones have been Raycon. They are absolutely terrific, and their wireless earbuds do it all. Raycon's everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. With optimized gel tips for the perfect in-ear fit, those earbuds are so comfortable, and they will not budge, trust me. And this is, I think, the best thing I can say about them. They give you 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life. You do not need to focus on recharging them all the time. You can trust them for days on end with that kind of battery power. And they're priced just right. You get quality audio at half the price of other premium audio brands. It's no wonder Raycon's everyday earbuds have over 50,000 five-star reviews. They've got 3 customizable sound profiles. They've got earbud tap functions, noise isolation, and an awareness mode. So go to buyraycon.com/hoop today to get 15% off your Raycon order. That's buyraycon.com/hoop to score 15% off. Buyraycon.com/hoop. And now joining us from Las Vegas, it's a little bit later in the day now. We're all older, wiser than we were a few moments ago when we talked to Mr. Spears. Joining me from his hotel room in Las Vegas is The Machine, Kevin Pelton.
Hey, Brian, miss you guys. Miss you here.
Not really. You don't really miss me.
Well, we don't get a chance to talk about your memification in person, so that's a bummer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a real, real great topic of conversation I can't get enough of.
For sure.
Did you go to the other summer league?
Yeah, I did the first 2 days of the Salt Lake City Summer League. So I got to see Chet Holmgren's 2 games there in addition to the one he's played here.
Right. I don't know if he's going to play many more. That might be about it.
Doesn't seem likely.
Yeah. Before we get into some other NBA maneuvers this offseason, what are some of the things that have stood out to you in the, you've now seen more summer league than any man should already this offseason?
That's fair. I mean, some people probably saw more with the California Classic with the 3 days of that. But I think so with Oklahoma City, I think actually as good as Chet Holmgren has been, and he's been awesome. And particularly that first game in Salt Lake City was kind of everything that was hyped about him is a prep prospect up and coming that we didn't necessarily see a lot of at Gonzaga. He wasn't asked to create his own offense, and you know, which is something that most 7-footers are not doing, particularly from beyond the 3-point line. But that was really fun to see because I hadn't seen it the 3 times I had seen him in person. You know, the defensive element we all knew was there, and I think that's going to be the bigger part of this game. Maybe that set the template a little wrong, but the guy who's really stood out from Oklahoma City to me is Jalen Williams, who I didn't know a lot about. He kind of popped late, is a first round caliber prospect. Had seen him at the NBA draft combine in Chicago, but he's been very impressive in their summer league games. And I think maybe has done more to increase my opinion of him than any other prospect so far. Also saw the 2 games for Paolo Banchero, 2 for Jabari Smith Jr., 1 for Keegan Murray thus far. And, you know, I think all 3 of those guys at times have really shown, and Chet belongs in the same tier as well, like what made them such outstanding prospects. And Jaden Ivey, who unfortunately is probably done for summer league after he suffered an ankle injury. But I think it's been a generally strong performance by this class. Maybe Jabari Smith Jr. looks like, you know, maybe a little slower developing, you know, thus far than the other guys, but also we know better than to read too much into summer league.
What about the second year guys? A number of them have played. You like to see a second year guy flat out dominate. That's what you like to see. You like to see a second year guy play two games and say, all right, I'll see you in training camp. What second year guys have sort of made an impression on you either way?
Yeah, I think Josh Giddey is in that category. They played him three games, and I think they wanted him to play a lot with Chet was part of the thinking behind that. But he definitely looked like he fell into the too good for summer league category. I think Josh Christopher has been pretty solid for the Houston Rockets. He was someone who, you know, played more than I think I expected as a rookie and kind of embraced the defensive element, which wasn't his game necessarily as a prospect. But I think he's got a bright future for Houston. So the two of those guys pop immediately.
Yeah, Giddey is, I mean, he's developed this super fast relationship with Chet Holmgren. I don't think they would have had a relationship beforehand. I don't know.
Yeah, not Giddey that was, I know of.
Giddey was in Australia until last year. He was in the Australian League 2 years ago when Chet Holmgren was in high school. They had a training camp, a few-day training camp, before they went to Salt Lake City, but like they are like genuine, like fast friends. And I was talking to some people around the team. It's not just like something, you know, that people are talking about because they look like they have a chemistry on the court. Like they're like really genuinely bonding, and the Thunder are like, wow, we might actually have something here. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has not been around because, he's been playing for the Canadian national team, but those are two top six picks. This is what you're looking for in your organization. This is part of their rebuild. And one is a ball handler and one's a rolling big. Obviously Giddey's role, he's going to sometimes play on the ball, sometimes play off in Oklahoma City. They started him last year alongside Shai, that might not be something that happens forever, but I think they just wanted to get him the minutes and the playing time. But when you look at that, is this a nice summer story, or is this a duo that you actually can see maybe developing into something?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think along with Shai, those are the three primary building blocks right now in Oklahoma City. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Chet's interesting as a pick and roll player because I think one of the areas where he probably will improve is his ability to kind of finish explosively around the basket. I think that's something I talked to our Kirk Goldsberry about. He plans to write about. Where he is really dangerous right now is the pick and pop game, because you have to defend him to the 3-point line where he shot 39% in his one season at Gonzaga. So that's I think really opened up space for the Giddey drive.
Of course, the Thunder drafted two guys named Jalen Williams. So, you are talking about the Jalen Williams who was drafted with the 12th pick. Is it the 12th pick or the 11th pick?
Yeah, the 12th pick. The 11th pick was Usman Jang, who I think is going to be a little more of a long-term project after playing in the NBL last year. But yeah, the Santa Clara wing drafted 12th as opposed to the Arkansas center drafted. It was like 41st, something like that.
Right. So summer league is, you know, it's sort of amorphous. It's always sort of it's very difficult to get a through line of what's going on. It's important, but it's hard to know what's important, what specifically is important about it. But stuff that happens in summer league tends to matter at some level later on. You just can't quite tell. For example, last year, the New Orleans Pelicans, if I'm not mistaken, played really well in summer league with their young guys. And those young guys ended up being big factors in the back half of their season. I mean, you couldn't have stood there and said, oh man, look at this Pelicans group. They're going to be great for the Pelicans later on. But like that foundation that they had with Trey Murphy and with Herb Jones ended up mattering. So is there anything that you've seen that you've sort of filed away for later on?
Yeah, but I think one thing that's interesting is these teams that have like large contingents of young players, because of the fact that they brought back some of their second year guys in addition to their rookies. So, you know, we talked about Houston as an example of that. They have three first round picks. Tari Eason, they're the second of those three first round picks, has been really impressive thus far. I like how he complimented. He was one of my favorite prospects in the draft.
Great, great size at LSU, right? Like 6'8".
Yep. And like how he compliments Elperon Shangoon and Jalen Green and Jabari Smith Jr. and the young talent that they have. And then, like I said, they have Christopher playing here. Unfortunately, Usman Garuba was unable to play due to injury. But you've got like this Houston, Oklahoma City, and maybe even Detroit, which has Isaiah Stewart here as a third-year guy, in addition to Jalen Duren and Jaden Ivey, their two first-round picks, their two lottery picks. You've almost seen like lineups that in some ways are better than those teams played at the end of the NBA regular season.
I believe that. I believe that, man. Ooh, there was a tankathon going on. Certainly the Thunder team that has shown up when they've had their like A team of their summer league guys was a lot better than some of the teams that they fielded at the end of the regular season.
Exactly. So I think that kind of helps those teams build chemistry a little bit. But, you know, one of the things I always say when people ask how important summer league is I feel like there's these two schools of thought that, oh, it's completely meaningless. You can't read anything into it. Josh Selby was the co-MVP with Damian Lillard. And then the other side of it is, well, this is hugely important. Like, you know, this player struggled. They're inevitably going to be a bust. And like both of those perspectives are wrong. It's somewhere in the middle where summer league means something, but it doesn't mean everything.
Man, I did not know that factoid that you just slipped in there. That
I looked it up Josh the other day. Selby,
oh my God. So what would that have been like? 2012. So Lillard and Josh Selby, who was a Grizzlies, like the 30th pick of the Grizzlies or something, wasn't he?
And he was going into his second year. And one of the things that is worth looking at with summer league stats is guys who shoot really hot from three, as Selby did that year. That probably doesn't mean that much because it's such small sample size, but stuff like rebounds, steals, and blocks tends to translate more consistently in the regular season, which is, you know, exciting if you're looking at Chet Holmgren, because that's the areas in which he's excelling.
Yeah, Chet Holmgren's basket defense, help defense is just, I think he'll walk in and be one of the best help defensive bigs in the league. I mean, staying out of foul trouble and all that sort of stuff and not being taken advantage of and getting bruised will be a factor. But the Thunder are going to play him anyway. I mean, it's not like he's not getting rebounds, so we're going to take him off the court. They're going to play him. It's going to happen.
Yeah, and that is one of the interesting things we've seen is they've played him basically exclusively at center here, even though they have Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who was their starting center at times last season, has played with Chet, but he's been the power forward in those lineups. Chet has been guarding the centers almost exclusively.
Yeah, the Thunder, the Thunder, I thought they were a possible team that could have made a run at DeAndre Ayton, who we're going to talk about in a second. They didn't have cap space after after July 1st, but if they had trade assets that they could have done. And I thought, you know, what they needed was bigs. And I wondered, I was like, you know, Ayton kind of fits their timeline, is a little bit older, but you know, if they want to get good, maybe, you know, they have to use their cap space on something. And they ended up using cap space on Lou Dort, which is what they let him out of his contract and then re-signed him. But and I checked on that. I was basically told, you know, the center of the future was just drafted. So I do think they do see him as a center, maybe not at all times, but I do think that they intend to play him there. So there'll be trial in there. That's one advantage that they have. So we talked about Ayton. We're recording this, like I said, Monday afternoon. There's been some chatter out there that Ayton could sign an offer sheet with Indiana at some point soon. Maybe by the time this podcast comes out, that will have happened. Maybe it won't have happened. Maybe it'll never happen. I mean, they've been kind of dancing around it for a while. It took Malcolm Brogdon. They had to do the Brogdon trade with Boston because they offloaded salary in that deal. And as we sit here today, I think they've got a neighborhood of $26 million in cap space. Does that sound right, Pelton?
That is correct.
Which is below the max. They could still do a sign and trade for Ayton and give him the max. And because they have a bunch of cap space, they wouldn't have to send back a bunch of salary to Phoenix. They could send back a role player. They could send back Miles Turner because Ayton would be their starting center. So I don't want to rule out a sign and trade, but if it's an offer sheet, you know, maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. The Pacers are obviously kicking the tires. They're obviously serious about this. What do you think about a Pacer fit for DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it probably depends in part on what can they get from Miles Turner if they're not sending him back in a sign and trade and something else, if they do sign him to this offer sheet, because you know it doesn't really, I don't think, make sense to keep the both of those guys on the roster. Hypothetically, maybe you could play them together because Turner can shoot and Ayton is mobile, but we already saw this movie with DeMontis Sabonis and Miles Turner the last few years. I don't think we need to go through it again. Ayton's a little younger, closer to the timeline of Benedict Mathurin, who was their lottery pick, who looked very good as a shooter in his debut.
Yeah.
And you know, clearly they're a few years away, and Tyrese Halliburton, who's the other kind of core piece for this team after they got him in the Sabonis trade. And I could see Halliburton and Ayton being a really good pick and roll combo, the two of them. Halliburton proving is effective in the pick and roll as he has the last couple of seasons. So, and then just from a standpoint of having somebody who is a good player now, but also still, given Ayton's age, has room to improve, I think it makes a lot of sense for a team like Indiana, especially if you feel like there's a legit chance that Phoenix is not going to match and you're just going to get this guy essentially for nothing.
Well, I wouldn't say Indiana never gets free agents. They've gotten a couple of significant free agents in the last 10, 12 years. David West went there, which was a big signing for them. Malcolm Brogdon went there. But they're not typically a team that can bank on getting free agents, and certainly not max level free agents. And what's benefiting them in this situation is there's just no other teams with cap space other than San Antonio, who is not moving in the direction of adding players through with their cap space right now. If they do, it'll probably be through trades where they take on something to acquire draft picks or young players. And so I just think Indiana might be reading the room and saying, how often we may be able to get a player like this. It kind of reminds me of Charlotte a couple of years ago with Gordon Hayward. Hayward's market was a little thin. They'd liked Hayward for a long time. And they're like, how else are we going to acquire talent? You know, he wasn't like the most perfect fit. But you know, they went for it. And so, if indeed this happens, if let's say the Phoenix Suns, hired you on a consulting contract, I know I kind of got a good feel how they feel about Ayton, but you know, what do you, you know, let's just say he signs for something near the max. Maybe it'll be the max. Maybe it'll be something just a little bit below the max. What about that value for Indiana and where Phoenix maybe would have to decide on that?
So first, I want to have a very long conversation with Monty Williams about what went on over the course of the season, culminating in that game 7 against the Dallas Mavericks, and try to understand that, because, you know, it seems to be a factor in, you know, why they're letting Ayton test free agency and not just trying to bring him back. And, you know, obviously their mindset going back to last fall when they declined to, you know, make him a max extension for the full number of years. And, you know, I wrote at the time that I thought that was a reasonable decision, but ultimately that I would have maxed out Ayton because, you know, there's not a clear path forward otherwise. And you were going to end up in a situation like this where you potentially dealt with a more onerous offer sheet from another team than what you could sign Ayton to if they do get to the max. So I would probably recommend they match it. I mean, the big thing is if that offer sheet is signed and submitted by the Pacers, which would be interesting. One of the things I noted in our Buzz file today is, you got to go back to since 1982, the Pacers have only made one offer sheet to a restricted free agent in that entire span. And it was Chris Copeland from New York, and the Knicks, because they had already used part of their exceptions, could not match that deal, had no ability to.
He was like a 10-day guy that they had sort of, maybe he wasn't a 10-day guy.
He was minimum. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a minimum player. It was not comparable to this situation.
No, definitely not comparable. I mean, he essentially was an unrestricted free agent. They just had to wait for them to officially be unable to match. So what that does is it takes the possibility of any sort of sign and trade off the table as soon as that offer sheet is submitted. That's the important thing to remember. And so from Phoenix's standpoint, my choices are now, I keep DeAndre Ayton at that offer or I get nothing. And Out of those two scenarios, I got to keep DeAndre Ayton, whether it's to, you know, potentially be part of a Kevin Durant trade down the line somewhere, to be part of some other trade. Like, you know, he's going to have value somewhere in the league at that number, especially if it comes in a little less than the max. And even if, you know, if Phoenix is reluctant to pay the luxury tax or, you know, doesn't feel Ayton's worth it, I think there's, we've talked on this podcast, various people about the test of, does this player still have trade value after you sign them to this contract? The Nene test, as my buddy Danny LaRue calls it, since he was the player who was traded like the next trade deadline after the Nuggets re-signed him. I think Ayton clearly is a yes on that test.
So at the end of the season, Robert Sarver gave an interview and then James Jones gave an interview where they indicated that they were willing to go into luxury tax with this team next year. Now, it's easy to say that's another thing to do it. I think we talked earlier, and I think you said that right now Phoenix is about $15 million below the luxury tax. is that with including his cap hold, or is that not even including him at all? Do you know?
Not including him at all. So that's if you fill out that they, you know, need to fill assign a few more minimums to, you know, get to enough players, they'd have about $15 million to spend above those minimums, okay, give or take.
Okay, that's obviously, you know, if the Pacers sign him, there's going to be for more than $15 million.
Yes, I'll take the over on that one.
So a match on him almost certainly, you know, if there's an offer sheet, a match on him almost certainly would put them in the tax. I think his qualifying offer is probably around 15-16 million. So I think that's right. So they, you know, even if he accepts that qualifying offer, I think they're probably headed pretty close to the tax. And
yes, $16.4 million.
Okay. So the one thing I wonder on the calculus that, you know, I think number one, I think the Suns feel like their center position, as good as Ayton has been the last 2 years, they feel like with the way they play, there's a number of players who can be successful in that center position. Bismack Biyombo played well in that position last year. JaVale McGee played well in that position last year. For a few days, like a handful of games, Jalen Smith started at center and averaged something like 14-8 as a starter or something like that. And then this is what they thought about Jalen Smith. They didn't pick up his fourth year option and then traded him shortly thereafter. And I think they believe that in their system, you know, it would be great to have a high level center, but they don't necessarily value it at potentially $25 to $30 million a year. And so the question is, how do they weigh this in light of the Durant situation? If there's an offer sheet and they match it, they then cannot trade Ayton until January 15th. They can't trade him at all next year to the Pacers. That becomes a rule. And so, you know, you can still trade him later, but it makes it hard to move money. It's, you know, Durant makes somewhere in the neighborhood of $44 million, $46 million. That's a hard trade to match. And so you will not be able to use Ayton in that kind of a trade, even if Ayton was being redirected. Right now, if they were able to do a Durant trade, they could redirect Ayton and help balance it out to another team in a sign and trade. Once that comes off the table, you know, you potentially are in the tax. And then do a Durant trade that's lopsided just because it's unlikely. You know, I think even if you look at their roster, building up to the trade to get to 46 million, you know, it's going to be hard for them even to get there. You know, there's a trade that they have that can qualify for it, but it's going to be hard to get there. So you wonder if part of their calculus is saving sort of a salary spot for Durant when he comes in. Because, you know, not when, if they do a Durant deal, they know they're going to be potentially bringing in a lot of extra salary, and that's going to blow their salary cap number way up there. So it's hard for me. The Suns are sort of in a juggling act here. I think that they would love to be able to spend like the Warriors spend, but they can't go 25 or 30 million into the tax. I think they can go into the tax, but I don't think they can go so deep that they're paying enormous amounts of money. And if let's say they match eight, let's say Ayton signs for 25 and they match eight, and then they go 10 million into the tax. And then let's say they later on get the opportunity to do a Durant trade and maybe they send out 35 million, 37 million, and they get back 40, whatever. Now they've gone, now they're 20 million into the tax. And now all of a sudden you've got a team that's outrageously expensive. And for some teams, they would say, whatever, you know, this is what we're going to do. That's not the way the Suns operate. Do you follow my calculus on that at all? Pelton, do you think that's a factor maybe in what they're looking at?
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing I will say is I think just to get the value for Durant to a point where the Nets would make that trade, it's probably going to take a lot of salary from the Phoenix standpoint. You know, Ayton is probably in that deal. Mikhail Bridges, who makes $20 million, is probably in that deal. And if you trade the two of those guys for Durant, you know, setting aside Cam Johnson would be another option. You do actually save money if it's a two-for-one deal. So I don't know that they should necessarily be that concerned about that element, but I think what it really illustrates more than anything is, look, the Suns right now have a variety of options. As long as DeAndre Ayton is sitting there unsigned in free agency, sign and trade is a possibility. We could just sign him and, you know, not be subject to some of the same restrictions. All those are options. As soon as he signs a contract, an offer sheet, all those things go out the window and your options are way more limited.
Well, let me ask you a couple more things about this before we go. One is, let's say Ayton ends up as a Pacer for whatever the price is. And let's say that there is not a Durant trade. Either he goes to someplace else besides the Suns, or he stays in Brooklyn. They hold him in Brooklyn and have a, you know, status quo situation there. Where are the Suns without DeAndre Ayton and you know, basically the core of their team coming back? I assume they would find another center in there at some point. But, you know, maybe they start with Biombo as their starting center. ESPN, in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions, presents Not Just Football with Cam Hayward. Each week, fans get a peek behind the curtain of NFL life. Pittsburgh Steelers and Ohio State University defensive tackle and five-time Pro Bowler Cam Hayward gives his unfiltered thoughts on the league and headlines across all sports. That's Not Just Football with Cam Hayward. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Is the roller coaster of starting a new small business throwing you for a loop? QuickBooks can help you get paid, run payroll, and know where your business stands from the start. New business, no problem. Success starts with Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more at QuickBooks.com. QuickBooks payroll, QuickBooks and payment QuickBooks online account required.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Yeah, I mean, I think this goes back to the point you made earlier, though. I think part of their calculus this entire time has been, can we get 80% of the production for, in Biombo's case, less than 10% of the price of paying DeAndre Ayton the max? I mean, from a financial standpoint, that's obviously a win. From a championship standpoint, especially in the playoffs, of we need to be the very best team we possibly can be, I don't think that makes sense anymore. And I would put them certainly a tier below Golden State and the Clippers, I think, in the West. You know, Zach Lowe has been mentioning for a while that he feels like if they let Ayton go and don't replace him with another quality center or, you know, some sort of upgrade elsewhere, that it's entirely realistic they could end up in the play-in tournament. And, you know, the West is deep enough at this point. Memphis, you know, obviously is also in that mix. Denver getting healthy. Dallas is still going to be very good, even without Jalen Brunson. And I'm probably forgetting a team off the top of my head. Minnesota, with the addition of Rudy Gobert, like, could they fall to seventh in the West? I think that's plausible. I don't know if I think it's likely, but it's plausible.
I don't know if Ayton is that valuable.
I think there's, you probably expect a little bit of regression with Chris Paul's age.
Probably. I mean, that's not unreasonable. I also think Mikhail Bridges, I think he's getting better. I think there's growth there. I think there's growth with Cam Johnson. I think, I'm not sure I can say there's growth with Devin Booker, who was first team all NBA, but I mean, I don't think he's going to get weaker. I was very impressed. I'm very impressed with where the Suns are, but I agree that it's fragile with, because Chris Paul is really, really important to them. And you know, so much of what they do, the reason their record was so good last year with the 60 plus wins, is because they were so terrifically awesome in all those close games. Chris Paul played a huge role in that. And so if you're going to sell me on why they would backslide, they might backslide just because, even if they still had Ayton, even if they were to keep Ayton, that, you know, there just could be some, you know, regression to the mean a little bit on some of all those games they won. That's reasonable to me. But, you know, I'm, you know, the Suns front office is very calculating. They're, and they have strong beliefs in things. And, you know, like Kevin Arnovitz wrote that piece on them about how they're, you know, they're not hugely heavily believers in building through the draft. Even though their team was built through the draft. They're not huge, heavy believers in spending a lot of money on a center. Even though, you know, this center was drafted number one overall. So their beliefs, their core beliefs have built this squad. So you have to kind of ride with that to a certain extent. So I will just one more thing before we go with the Suns. It's possible that one of the things that the Suns look at here is that in the last 2 years, Chris Paul has said he wants to be a Phoenix Sun. That happened. Kevin Durant is interested in being a Phoenix Sun. That may or may not happen. There's a possibility that another player might also say, I want to be a Phoenix Sun. And they have all their draft picks going forward. They have really good young players. If keeping Ayton makes that harder to do a trade like that down the line, or if, you know, they miss out on Durant, there might be an opportunity cost with where they're at. And so part of their calculus may be, we are maybe more of a destination now. Should we lean into that? Now it's obviously a huge risk because you have Chris Paul at age 37. Do you think I'm insane in bringing something like that up, that they would calculate an opportunity cost where maybe there could be something else for them on the trade market down the line, that this could close up some of those rules? Or, you know, feel free to tell me you think I'm insane.
I think it's reasonable for them to think that way. You know, that you're right. I mean, Phoenix was for so many years a destination in the NBA in the 90s. Like it was a, you know, right up there with the New Yorks and LAs and maybe the next tier after that. And it feels like things kind of went away from them for a period of time where it wasn't nearly as in vogue, but they did like almost sign LaMarcus Aldridge. They were second in the running for him when he was the prize of free agency back in 2015. Yeah. I mean, Steve Nash wasn't a max guy at that point and had played there previously, but yeah, I mean, that's one of the great free agent signings, transformative ones in NBA history. So yeah, I think that part of it is reasonable. I just mostly don't think Ayton, you know, retaining Ayton takes that off the table, because I just think he's going to be very tradable going forward. Like there's clearly interest in him in the league, the number one pick, and you know, the how well he played in the 2021 playoffs. There's going to be a lot of teams who are going to be, I think, excited to be add someone like that to the roster. He's not tradable from the standpoint of like Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel. It didn't cost the Knicks that much to get off of them to sign Jalen Brunson. Like he's tradable from the standpoint of you get stuff if you're moving DeAndre Ayton down the road. So that's why I would, again, probably match the offer sheet if it was out there. One point I think we should touch on is timing. So you mentioned the Malcolm Brogdon trade. The Pacers and Celtics have a week to get those physicals completed during the offseason. Bobby Marks helped walk me through this. And so that deal was official on Saturday. And Indiana can't like be certain that it has the cap space until a week from that. So that could affect the timing of this.
Right. That's true. All those physicals have to be cleared. And in Brogdon's case, he does have a history of knee and foot injuries. You wouldn't want to make sure you check that out fully before it's cleared. So we're a little bit flying blind here. We don't know because there's lag with the podcast posting, but I would just say that if the Pacers sign an offer sheet, and if the Suns don't match, there's going to be some blowback in Phoenix. And people are going to look at Robert Sarver. Even if they have their reasons for doing so, people are going to look at Robert Sarver. You know, if they had an option to get Miles Turner, who's, what does he make this year? About $18 million?
Correct.
Who has 1 year left on his contract? Who would be a pretty good stopgap? And the stopgap isn't even fair. That sort of undersells him. He would be a reasonable replacement who could be cheaper. He's a different type of player, but he can stretch the floor a little bit more than Ayton can, and he's a shot blocker. So I don't know. We don't. Not all of it is clear just yet, but we'll see how it develops. Thank you, Mr. Pelton. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will talk to you later this week.